Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D at ItalianAmericanLife.com. I am your host, Frankie D, and today is another part of our series of podcasts on Christopher Columbus. Today we'll be talking about the pro and con voices from both within and outside the Italian-American community. As always, I am partnered with Carla Simonini, who is the director of the Paul and Ann Rubino Italian-American Studies Program at Loyola University in Chicago. And our guest today is Heather Miller, the Executive Director of the American Indian Center of Chicago. Heather, welcome to our podcast today, and thank you for being here.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Frank and Carla.
Thank you for coming. We appreciate your participation in this. And I thought we'd just start out. Maybe you could just tell people more about your organization and, its mission and maybe even how you got involved with it. I think that would be a good place to start. So,
sure. Well, hi, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. Mm-hmm. My name is Heather Miller. I am an enrolled citizen of the Wyandotte Nation from Oklahoma, and I am the executive director of the American Indian Center here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Our center is one of the oldest urban Indian centers in the entire country. We were founded in the late 40s, early 50s, and what was happening at the time for Native people was another law around our demise, our removal. This was called relocation. And so what was happening was federal agents would go into reservations and they would offer Indians a bus ticket and say that they would get a better life moving to a city. Chicago is one of five relocation cities. And so even though the state had spent a lot of time removing Indians, now all of a sudden Indians were moved back into these cities. They didn't oftentimes find a lot of jobs or resources. So our center was born as a way to help provide a resource to the massive amount of Indians that were being relocated here. So we started off doing a lot of social services, a lot of support work, making sure that our Native community had places to go, that they had food, that they did find jobs, that they did find these connections, and that we were a place where we could practice our culture and our heritage and just continue to be a Native presence in the city. So our center's changed a little bit since the 50s, but we continue to be a place where our Native community can practice our heritage and traditions. We do that through a lot of arts and culture and just community engagement work. So when we are open, we do a lot of community events, and anyone is more than welcome to attend and learn more about our community and who we are.
I think that's important to know. I don't think a lot of people know about that history and then what happened with, the first being taken away from your land and this relocation program. So, and it's good to know that, well, I hope you're open soon. We all hope we're open soon to public events and being able to do things. The Loyola campus is closed right now too. That's why I'm sitting in my kitchen talking to you now and teaching remotely. So, certainly I can tell you, from my perspective, I'd love to use the resources of the American Indian Center in conjunction with my classes moving forward. So I hope this is the beginning of just one encounter. So thank you. I wanted to ask in particular, obviously, a lot of this debate has been spurred by the recent events all over the country, but particularly in Chicago, there's been the removal of the statues, Lori Lightfoot's decision to remove them. And I just wanted to quote, this is from you in the Chicago Tribune. You say this is July 24th. With these statues, meaning the Columbus statues, gone, it now seems time to replace Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day, both in Chicago and throughout Illinois. So my question is, it's certainly clear that the Native population was subject to, atrocities. Nobody is going to debate that as a result of the colonization of the United States, the doctrine of manifest destiny. The history and presence of the American Indian has been greatly erased. I know that's one of the missions of your center is to redress that. I guess I'm wondering why the focus on Columbus Day and how you feel that the replacement of Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day is like a necessary step in redressing that. Why, that's my particular question to you.
That's a great question, Carla. I think that we need to actually widen that question a little bit, and we need to understand that this isn't necessarily just about Columbus. This isn't just about a statue. This isn't just about one version of history. This is about addressing the full breadth of colonization and the structural racism that exists because of efforts of colonization and what that looks like. So when we talk about Columbus, and when we have a focus on Columbus Day, what we're really saying is that we recognize that there are systems of oppression that still exist within this country and within the structure of government that we have. We would like to see changes on a structural level to make that happen. And when we're constantly being bombarded with images and things like Columbus, that impedes our steps to the structural change that we're actually looking for. So Columbus is just one part of this larger issue, this larger idea of finding ways to basically decolonize our structures of government. So that's really what we're looking at. That's really why we have this focus. And when we say we'd like a change to Indigenous Peoples Day, one of the reasons that we want to do this is because we want folks to understand that this is Native land. This has always been Native land. And we've got a different type of narrative that we'd like to see incorporated into our understanding of how America was created and what that looks like. And we're simply asking for a better representation of what has actually happened and transpired to get us into this situation today.
I understand that. I do. I guess playing devil advocate a little bit here, there's a question that comes up like, so, I mean, America's colonial enterprise is vast. I mean, that we exist as a result of that. So again, you know, Columbus being a figure that can be interpreted different ways. I wonder, like, why the focus on him, like why the replacement of him with Indigenous as opposed to just broader, like adding an Indigenous Peoples Day. I mean, that's something I know I've heard that come up different ways. And in my own experience, I think you and I talked before we had this interview, I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island. And, you know, the Narragansett Indian tribe has lands there. I went to school and worked later with representatives from the Narragansetts. And I remember growing up as a little girl, there was more focus on the day of mourning, which was on Plymouth Rock on Thanksgiving Day. And that was the point at which they were saying, why are we celebrating the arrival when for us, you know, for the Native peoples here, it was the beginning, you know, of an end, really. And that was where there was never a conflict, I guess, between the Native Americans and the Italian Americans surrounding Columbus Day, that the focus was more on Thanksgiving Day and recognizing that as the North American beginning of the colonization, as opposed to Columbus, you know, who actually, if you want to look at it historically, never set foot on North America. So playing devil's advocate here, maybe you can just expound a little bit upon when that shift happened and what is the intent behind that shift from the Thanksgiving to the Columbus, the earlier colonization.
I don't think that there's ever really been a shift. I think there's still a focus on Thanksgiving because there's still an imperfect narrative out there around these historical events. So right now, monuments and Columbus and Columbus Day are getting a lot of attention. And so they're just the pieces that are at the forefront. But we haven't stopped any kind of actions or pressing for narrative change around Thanksgiving either. I mean, it's still the same thing. Mm-hmm. Just to also talk about why Columbus is a figure and why this is so important. I mean, I was just sitting here thinking when I was in school, in elementary school, one of the first things that I remember learning was in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. You know, we get this fictionalize, or we get this fun story, this fun song to sing about, you know, our founding of the country, what this is. And so as children, we're taught this story, we're taught this narrative. And so we recognize that it starts at a really early age. All of this is permeated throughout these systems, throughout the way that us as individuals are being taught and trained and taught to just be like these citizens that don't have all the correct information. I mean, that's where I was focused on Columbus, because it's starting at the root of knowledge bases for our young children. I mean, that's the thing that we want to change. We want to have a better understanding of the fact that, you're right, Columbus didn't even land here. So why are we training our young people? Why are we training our youth in schools to carry on this narrative and keep this image alive? I mean, that's what I have an issue with when it comes to Columbus. It's the fact that we're still highlighting this. This is still sold in curriculum. This is still told in the stories that we teach our kids. This is still the narrative that comes up. And we need to recognize the fact that, no, Native people were here first. What these actions did, that colonizers came to, when they came to America, their actions put in place the systems for slavery and for genocide that still continue to this day. We, as Native people, we still live in genocide. And so we need to have a frank dialogue with not only the United States citizens, but also the federal government, to take accountability for their actions and find ways to remove the systems that allow for us as Native peoples to still be living in genocide. I mean, that's ultimately what we're looking for here.
I think that, I mean, that's so important. I mean, there's nothing, I mean, obviously I'm an educator and education's what it's all about. And I, you know, I think there has been some, because of actions like groups like yours and others, there has been a lot of movement in that direction. I think about the way I was taught, I don't know about Frank, but you in school, how we were taught about Columbus versus what our children are learning. There's definitely been, you know, a shift in the dialogue. My daughter has a very different view than I was given. And then, you know, I've made it my work to learn and study. So hopefully, you know, we can, you know, it's all about, I think, coming together. I was wondering if maybe you could just share some of what you told me before about what it's like to live as a Native person in the United States. You talked about having to register and things like that. I don't think a lot of people know that history. So maybe you could just share that.
Yeah. So, you know, as a member, so I introduced myself as a citizen of a federally recognized tribe. So that actually means something. That has a legal status.
Right. I know that from my friends in the Narragansett also. Yes, they were very clear on that with me growing up. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is important, and we don't understand this fact. So Native Americans, we're not a race of people, we're not a special interest group. We have a legal status within the Constitution and within the federal government system. We are members of sovereign nations. The US federal government, as they were creating themselves, they wrote treaties with Indian nations. We have government to government relationships. So that puts us in a different category than any other person in this country. You know, it's a completely different setup. And so that means that we have different rights and responsibilities owed to us by the federal government because of the treaties that they signed with us as individual tribal nations, individual governments. So I am representing myself as a citizen of a sovereign nation within another sovereign nation. So that's my status. That's where I wake up every single day, and I have to walk both of these two worlds. So not only do I have to recognize myself as a tribal person, as a member of my own nation, but then I'm also a US citizen. So that's where it comes down to. Now, there are certain laws, because of the fact that we have this legal status within the country, that are maybe not 100% appropriate, and they've been used as a way to get rid of us. The federal government has seen Native people as a problem, as a way, as an impediment to capitalism as an impediment towards building economic systems that are different. So we've always been seen as problems. And so because of our legal status, we then are involved in different situations. That's a polite word to say it. Sure. That allow the federal government to track us, to understand like where we're at. And these laws, you know, like relocation, those a federal law to kill us, to remove us. I mean, so many of the laws on the books were designed just to kill and remove Indians. Mm-hmm. One of those laws was the Dawes Act. That's another federal law that created an allotment system, but it also created what we now know as blood quantum. And so for Native folks, we have documentation because of the Dawes Act, because of these federal rules that identify how much Indian blood we have. So we have to carry paperwork with us if we are members of federally recognized tribes that tell the US government how much blood quantum we have. We have roll numbers because the federal government has to keep track of how many Indians are in a certain tribe. So I walk around with my paperwork every day that tells me and tells the federal government like who I am. And, you know, I'm 3,014 of my tribe. So the federal government knows that with me, they only have 3,014 other Wyandots that they have left to kill. I mean, that is what we're talking about. That's the system of genocide that we still live in as Native people. We have to realize Indians, dogs, and horses were the only three groups that have to carry paperwork that identify how much blood we have, that, you know, identify who we are. So we're not even on the same level as other human beings. We're on the same level as dogs and horses when it comes to our own identity and what is happening in this country. So when we say we want recognition, when we say we want these stories told, it's because this is what happens every single day. This is our reality. This is what we wake up with, and this is what we deal with. And so we want a change. We don't want to live in this system. We want our culture to be preserved. We want our heritage to be preserved, and we want to live in relationship with the land that is literally ours, that we are the caretakers of. That's what we want. And so this type of idea and this type of thinking needs to be changed, not only on a personal level, but it has to change from a federal government perspective, from a state government perspective, even from a city perspective, because of that legal status that we have as Native people.
So Heather, you literally have to carry on your person every day and walk around with papers explaining
they're federal ID forms. So just like I would carry around my driver's license, I also carry around my enrollment card.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Huh. Yeah, and you know, I'm sorry, we had talked about the questions before. I didn't say that I was going to bring that up, but I wanted to be, and I apologize. You know, I know it's got to be painful to relive that situation, but I don't think a lot of people know that. I know they don't. And so I wanted to, you know, bring
that. No, I doubt that people knew that part of it. No, I never did.
Yeah. So, in terms of empathy, you know, and establishing greater understanding and you know, where the pain comes from too. And yeah, it's going to seem kind of silly in light of that revelation, but I do want, because we are here to talk about Columbus, we previously spoke with Professor William Connell, and, you know, he's an American, he's a historian, and his approach was looking at it in terms of the symbolism of the holiday. And I thought he was very interesting because he is one of the few scholars I heard who linked it to an attempt at redefining what it means to be an American, and a more inclusive vision, an 1892 more inclusive vision of what it meant. And he linked the first national celebration. We know that there, you know, Columbus has had individual celebrations in different states, but the first time it's declared a national holiday is in, you know, 1892. It's the same year that the Columbian Exposition here in Chicago was established. And Professor Connell, I'm going to just read from his, he is a scholar of Professor Harrison, who he says is often, you know, doesn't maybe get as much attention as he should. And in his perspective, there were two things that happened before that first celebration that he claims troubled Professor Harrison, that he was uncomfortable with them. One of them being the Battle of Wounded Knee, which 1890 massacre left 150 Native Americans dead, and was the final clash between the federal troops and the Sioux Nation. And also in 1891, there was the largest recorded mass lynching in U.S. history. Recorded, I say, because there certainly is a possibility that there were others that were larger, but it's the largest one that we have the actual records on in New Orleans, where there were 11 Italians, specifically Sicilians, who were rounded up and, you know, basically just killed in the piazza over the outrage that they allegedly were responsible for the death of a police chief. I know, I mean, I teach the second history. The first history I do not teach, but I've tried to, you know, learn as much about it. And Harrison, there was a political fallout with the Italian government over the latter one. And Harrison was trying to get reparations. Actually, that act led to anti-lynching legislation being introduced into the U.S. Congress and whatnot. And, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and others are on the record of kind of saying, well, the Italians got what they want. You know, they deserve that. These weren't, you know, good people. They weren't, you know, completely, you know, worthy of full status as representatives of the United States. And, you know, Harrison actually stepped in over Congress and gave some reparations to the family, even though it was had been overturned. So there seems to have been some sort of sympathy in that regard. And according to Professor Connell, he also felt some remorse over what had happened with the Sioux. So according to, again, Professor Connell's research, he says that Columbus Day was supposed to recognize the greatness of all America's people, but especially Italians and Native Americans. So how does this understanding of what Columbus Day represented in 1892 compare to where we are today? Is there any validity to the fact that it was meant, at least in 1892 terms, to represent some attempt at creating a broader understanding of what it means to be American? You're smiling. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's talk about the Columbian Exposition.
Okay,
let's
talk about
what was actually going on. Yeah. And it's all great that you bring up the massacre and the Battle of Wounded Knee, because all of these things actually tie really nicely together, and it shows how much learning we actually have to do. Mm-hmm. So lots of people don't know this. One of the highlights of the World's Fair here mm-hmm. in Chicago was a replica of a boarding school, an Indian boarding school. Mm-hmm. So boarding schools, for those folks that don't know, was another form of genocide. This was another law on the books that was created for Native Americans. So a general within the federal cavalry really thought that he had the solution to the Indian problem. He was going to create a school and teach children basically how to not be Indian. His motto was kill the Indian, save the man. And so he went out to communities, and this happened all over the United States. This happened in Canada. This has happened to many indigenous communities, even across the world. But here in the United States, Indian kids were rounded up, basically taken from their families, taken from their parents, forced into boarding schools. They were forced to cut their hair. They were beaten if they spoke their language. They learned trades. So many children died trying to escape, or just died of the conditions that they were living in. They're buried in tons of unmarked graves all around these boarding schools. And this was something that was highlighted at the Columbus World Fair here in Chicago. So they had a boarding school. They specifically brought kids in to fill this boarding school. And this was something that tourists at the World's Fair could then come and look at. So they could see this remarkable, remarkable human experiment that was going on to kill the Indian and save the man. The same time that Wounded Knee had just happened, we had a really massive railroad system in place. And so the prisoners of war that the cavalry took from Wounded Knee were rounded up and paraded through the United States on a tour, on a railroad tour. They stopped through Chicago on their way down to where they were later going to be imprisoned in Florida, in St. Augustine, at the fort in St. Augustine. But while they were here in Chicago on tour, they were forced to model and to pose for a lot of statues and a lot of monuments that are currently up in Chicago. If you go into the Marquette building downtown, all the busts in the Marquette building are actually replicas of these prisoners of war that were, quote unquote, prisoners of war. They're not prisoners of war. They were casualties of genocide and murder. So their portraits are the busts in the Marquette building. So still this very violent, horrible, genocidal history is on display here in Chicago. This is something that we get to see every single day if we're lucky enough to go see it. The World's Fair is the same thing. You know, we had all of these very violent genocidal policies and situations happening at the World's Fair. And so even referring to the Columbus World Fair for a Native person can definitely trigger some of these very violent and genocidal things that have happened. So even when we're talking about how this is a celebration of these events, or, you know, a reminder of these events, we're not getting the full story. We're not getting what really happened here. And so still to be reminded of, this is the type of thing that happened at this World Fair, the Columbian Expo, again, highlighting Columbus, recognizing this, it's like, why do we have to keep doing this? This is so, it's so repetitive. It's so gross. It's so draining emotionally for Native people to have to remember these things, remember our history, remember the genocide that happened and still continues to happen to this day. So that's, I mean, that's what we're talking about. That's why this is so, it's such a important topic to have these conversations around, so we can truly understand these points in time that have had major impacts on us as a community of Native folks.
Yeah. Well, I want to apologize. I certainly wasn't attempting to trigger anything. I mean, that's exactly what we're trying to do here, is to talk about these things and in a constructive way, and you know, with the objective being to have understanding, you know, mutual understanding. So,
Heather, you're saying that these boarding schools that were at the expo, it was there as a display, like they were bragging about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, this Colonel Pratt was so over the moon about boarding schools. This was like his most favorite thing. He thought this was the greatest invention that he had ever produced, the world had ever produced. And that's what's so messed up. I don't want to say that word. I would want to say another word, but we'll keep it PG.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. That's what's so messed up about this. Yeah. Like he thought, and the federal government thought, that this was okay. I mean, it's, that's genocide, like killing people's culture. That is genocide. If you can't understand that fact, and like, if we don't want to talk about it as a nation or anything like that, I mean, yeah, that's where the problem comes in.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's in that era of, you know, increased xenophobia all around too. I mean, certainly the Native peoples suffered long before that, but that was the tenor of the times, and the Italians were part of that narrative too. And I don't want to compare, you know, suffering. That's not constructive.
Yeah, but this is not the suffering Olympics. That's not.
No, and that's not what it's about. But it's about trying to find ways to bridge people. I mean, I would argue also based on what I read that even the Columbus Day celebrations that the Italian Americans embraced because they saw in Columbus some sort of figure that they could identify with. He was from the continent of Italy, even though it didn't exist as a nation yet, and he was some sort of migrant who went across the seas, and he was brave and faced the unknown. Which it was a narrative that they could certainly relate to. And that's what I think resonates to this day with the Italian American community. And there's also there's also an assimilationist narrative that goes with it. If you read, we've talked also with a French scholar who talks about the Italians embracing Columbus Day meant fitting into being a certain type of Italian, which was an Italian who was more American than ethnically Italian. So there's that as well. So I just like to bring up Frank too. To give people more things that they should study. I mean, the Trail of Tears and what happened with the Cherokee Nation. I mean, the Cherokee Nation bought into, I think, the idea of assimilation and they became farmers. They did a lot of the things that they were told that should be done to be part of mainstream America. In society, and yet they still were forced westward. So there's a lot of terrible history there that we don't study enough in school, and that we should be looking at more critically.
Yeah, and it's not just Cherokees. I mean, everybody has had, or lots of tribes have had, different removals. So here in the Midwest, we have the Trail of Death that removed the Potawatomi. Mm-hmm. That was a big one. Trail of Tears. They didn't just remove the Cherokee. This was Choctaw, and several of the other southeastern tribes that were still alive after the Spaniards did their Spaniard things.
Yeah. And again, this is history. Like, I know that's the mission of your center too, to get this history out there and to make raise our awareness all around. So. I don't know if this is kind of a moot point, but I there are some other scholars, Joseph Shura and Laura Roberto, who actually are on the side of discontinuing the Italian American fascination with or attachment to Columbus Day. And I would like to say it's not all Italian Americans. There is controversy and there's dissent within the group itself. It just seems when the public face is out there, it's always tends to be around this issue, which is a whole other theme that Frank and I are exploring, sort of like beyond Columbus, who are we, how do we identify if we still have value from our culture of descent? So that's a separate discourse. But within, where Columbus has been adopted, just going to read a little thing. In the late night, this is a quote from an article written by Joseph Shura and Laura Roberto. They say, in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, Italian immigrants saw the American idolization of Columbus as a way to deflect the onslaught of xenophobic and racial prejudice and violence they encountered, and for which they were relatively unprepared as new arrivals in the United States. They bought into and contributed to a specific Italian reading of Columbus in relationship to their brutal experiences of bigotry. And in my courses, I teach about the conditions in Italy that led to the migration. There are many stories, families that died because they were eating the plaster from their walls. I mean, certainly the conditions that these people left were pretty terrible, and they weren't prepared for some of the discrimination and conditions that they encountered here in the United States. So there, there's a trauma there too, a different type of trauma, mm-hmm. but nonetheless a trauma. I'm wondering if bringing that narrative back to the forefront with the Italian American community offers any way to open up more dialogue, and can we come together more as opposed to seeming to come at odds around this figure of Columbus? And maybe you could just comment on your feelings on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's very clear that the intentions of Columbus Day were to help change the image of Italian Americans and to help overcome, the situations that were not okay for them, overcome these oppressive situations. So it seems like it's worked. Mm-hmm. I mean, when was the last time any Italian Americans got lynched? I mean, I'm just wondering, really. Mm-hmm. When?
I think 1920s or 19, yeah, something around there. So yeah. Yeah. So we've got,
So mm-hmm. it worked. So that's cool. Like we did that. Let's celebrate the fact that that has changed now for your community. Mm-hmm. Let's celebrate the people now who have helped like advance your community, who have done things to really bring your culture and your heritage alive and to keep that, those traditions, available and known to the public. Let's celebrate that. I mean, we just saw in Colorado this past year that they changed Columbus Day to Francis Cabrini Day. I mean,
Mother Cabrini. Yes.
Yeah.
Who was from Chicago, incidentally. Yes.
Exactly. That's why I bring this up. Like, here's a really positive example of ways to celebrate Italian heritage and Italian contributions to this country. Why do we have to continue to celebrate something that to a group of people signals their demise or the start of their demise? Like, Why keep doing that? That's right. My question.
Yeah.
Why are we so intent on this? There are other things that we can do to celebrate and to highlight positive contributions of your community. Mm-hmm. I would rather do something positive than keep this old violent and oppressive narrative going, because that's where the real structural change comes in. You know, when we start celebrating and highlighting people who have made positive contributions, who are doing positive things to change images of people, that's when I think we're moving to a good place and really finding ways to celebrate one another, as opposed to creating these issues of divisiveness.
Yeah, I hear you. I know, Frank, maybe you can talk about some what you your the ideas with, like, hey, he's our guy kind of thing. Do you mind? Or even like with the Arrigo Park in particular, our statue in Arrigo Park, there's a sense of ownership for that, not just.
Right. I mean, Heather, we come to the point where it's a difficult situation for a lot of people, because when you take 2020 and not thinking about the origin and all that, the bottom line is, you know, people 50 years ago, you know, they raised money and they put it in this little Italy, so to speak. And, you know, there's a lot of emotion there. There's a lot of, you know, like, oh my God, that's part of our neighborhood. That's part of our past. That's, you know, my so-and-so, you know, donated money and, you know, people. So they get emotional about the removal of their statue. Mm-hmm. In their park, you know, so you could see where, you know, it's a human nature thing. It's a human feeling that they feel a certain way, like something's been taken from them. Mm-hmm. Now, are they thinking about the overall history and all the things you brought up? Probably not. In plain English.
I would say definitely not, Frank. Yeah.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very difficult situation for a lot of people, unfortunately, you know.
And, you know, I think that people really cling to that too. Like, oh, my grandmother, you know, was poor and she gave $10. I mean, you hear people say that, and it was.
And not trying to compare it.
No. But there is a sense of.
Because they donated $10 and they feel a connection. No, I'm not trying to compare. I'm just saying, what are these people really feeling? Mm-hmm. That's what they're feeling.
Yeah. And I can say, I can share this with you, Heather, too. I mean, I went to the Columbus Day Festival. I was invited because of my title and everything. And, you know, it's a fun day. It's a beautiful day. And, you know, people came up to me and say, no one's here is celebrating genocide. I'm like, well, not overtly, but now, but let's get into what this, you know, represents. And that, you know, that's why we want to have these conversations and you know, bring it to.
It was very good. And we appreciate
bring it to a different level. What would you like? I mean, as an educator and, you know, Frank is being a community voice, you know, what can we do to keep making things better, to build more bridges? What would, just.
Off the top of your head.
Sorry. Don't mean to put you on the spot like that. But
this is a good start. I mean, finding ways to broaden the conversation, finding ways to provide a different perspective is a good start. I mean, there's going to be if I could have an ideal world where we are decolonized, I mean, mm-hmm. okay, I also never think that we're going to be decolonized. Yeah. So I mm-hmm. probably should stop using that word, but in my ideal world, we would be. Mm-hmm. And so if we want to get to that space, I mean, we've got to understand, we've got to have some kind of reckoning. We've got to have some kind of like truth and reconciliation process that happens. I'd love to see reparations happen at some point. Mm-hmm. But in order to do that, you know, we have to be more willing to engage in narrative change and in discussion around this. We've got to be open to seeing other points of view, to understanding that there's other things going on that affect us as Native people and as citizens of this country. So I think, you know, the more that we can do to not only step up to conversations like this, but also educate ourselves, you know, read about Native history in this area. Find out why there aren't Native people.
Yeah,
why
that's are interesting. There's nothing here. Like I said, I grew up in an area where there were, tribal.
Find that out. Do the research. Yeah. I mean, like, figure this out. We have our programs now online. We're trying to do more engagement out through an online platform. So even find some of our work, take a look at it, see what we're doing as an organization and get involved that way. Provide that education to yourself. Like that's a really important next step. It's not going to be an overnight process. We realize that this is not like, we're not going to change society tomorrow. But we all have to step up to the plate and make commitments to live in a world that is better for everybody, truly. And it starts with recognizing that Native people still live in genocide, and we've got to fix that.
Agreed. Education, I think, is really the tool. And that's what we were trying to do with this program. Like, let's put this out there in all different perspectives as much as we can. And and the other thing too with Columbus is always going to be a controversial figure. We talked with a scholar from Italy. He was controversial in his day. He was a divisive figure in his day. And the fact is, for better or for worse, the voyage happened and we are where we are now. And so how we make sense of it going forward is really the key to making, like you said, a society that's better for everybody. And I can't think anyone would argue with that not being a good thing, although. So, well, Frank, any other comments or?
No, that would be it. And Heather, you know, I agree with what you were saying, and it does start pretty much at the individual. Mm-hmm. The individual needs to learn more, to educate themselves. And with individuals and multiple individuals, that's how groups change, I would believe. So, like I said, thank you for your input. Thank you for enlightening us with all that knowledge that, you know, I certainly didn't know about. So, Carla, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much. Possible. I really do. I know it's difficult to revisit these issues, and I know you're out there on the front having to talk about them over and over. Thank you for being willing to share with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thank you. And to all our listeners, have a great day. Thank you.